Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, despite the fact England are playing tonight, got a touch loose at times.
Yes.
But I think, you know, it didn't hurt.
It's international week.
It didn't hurt. It was international
fever.
Week. But we did find out about a new range of football kits. The first ever football kits. Officially licensed by the Beatles.
Yes, most people were happy to hear about it, but yeah, not everybody.
Just mark the Leeds fan as you discover, not so keen. We spoke to the world karaoke champion. She went to Panama.
Fantastic.
And blew everybody away. Fantastic. She talked us through that. You had a bit of a row with Andy Brassel.
I know.
Just a meeting of minds, really. Well, and in it, we saw some quite stunning hypocrisy from the world of football.
He thinks 14-0's fine in a qualifier, and I don't.
Okay, well, you beg to differ, but it was entertaining. What else did we do today? Let me look at the producer. Oh, that and a whole lot more.
That's
besides,
it.
Really.
Yeah.
I think I should keep you on. Yeah. Clips Pewter, we brought you those. Mike Ward.
Yeah.
Was interesting.
Ooh,
on the non-sporting TV. So, here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Yes, good afternoon, Paul. And I've been talking during the World Cup final about just hoping India would lose. Not because I love Indian cricket.
Yeah.
I love the whole thing about the IPL and all that. But it's just Harsha Bogle, a man who I've often admired.
One of the commentators,
great
of course.
Commentator,
yeah, great
commentator.
Indian commentator. Yeah.
But he just got a bit too...
Jingoistic.
Pro, you know, too biased. It was worse than Alan Smith during a North London derby. Really. Honestly, it was really bad.
Alan, of course, would refute that in his Gunnosaurus outfit.
Yeah. Of course he would.
Yeah.
So I did promise that if India were to lose, thinking that it wouldn't happen, that I'd tweet him, this, basically.
Oh, Andy.
I don't know if he enjoyed it.
That's the Laughing Policeman, a song from about 1922. Do you think Harsha got it?
Well, he'd get this bit, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think he probably will. Has he come back to you yet?
No, he hasn't.
If you want a beautiful review of the TV coverage, the ICC
fabulous.
Feed, go and read Alan Tyre's piece today in the Daily Telegraph. It's magnificent. He did point out that, Narendra Modi basically seeing his team lose in the Narendra Modi Stadium.
It was a bit ungracious.
Was a touch.
Well, he gave Pat Cummins the trophy and then he just nipped off.
It was shades of John Howard in 2003 when he kind of threw the England medals at the players when Australia lost the final in Australia. Charlie Baker made a good point to me and to you, Andy, straight after. Surprised I haven't turned the lights off. But I don't think a World Cup final has ever ended in such deafening silence.
Oh, the silence was fair.
Yes.
To be fair to them, I mean, they greeted every four with silence. But when Travis Head got that wonderful 100, when he got to the 100,
they did applaud him. Proper cricket fans. That's why they love the game. But there's a wonderful turn of phrase in Alan's piece. It's a phrase I've not heard before, but it is a thing of beauty. He was talking about the ICC feed coverage as opposed to what we get with the Sky commentators. And he said the Australian is fronted by Shane Watson and Matthew Hayden. He said, Watto might be as thick as a dungeon wall.
That's a great
That's
night,
beautiful, Alan. Fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, dungeon wall.
Yes. I was watching the Antiques Roadshow last night, and Hugh Johns, the great legendary Hugh Johns' son.
Yeah.
Not his son's legend, his father's the legend. I didn't put that very well. But
his son may be a legend.
Well, I don't think he is, really. Okay. Well, he might be. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough. Well, look, this afternoon we're very much looking at the legendary status of Hugh Johns' son.
Anyway. So he was on Antiques Roadshow, and he brought some wonderful memorabilia with him, you know, from Hugh's career, including his sort of notes for this 1966 World Cup final. So the expert said, oh, yes, did your father commentate on that? He said, yeah, I did. He did, yeah. I was very proud, he said. And he did those famous words, they think it's all over. And he went, no, that wasn't...
No.
That was Kenneth Wolstenholme.
Yes.
He said, well, what did your father say?
He has, and that's it.
And that's it.
And that's what he says. Yeah. Is he going to get the hat-trick at Hurst? He has, and that's it.
That's exactly what he did. Yeah, two
because
that's
on fantasy apparently. Football, you had David and Frank presenting a popular comedy game show called He Has, and that's it.
I know. Yeah. But anyway, look, the expert sort of backed away and sort of said, oh, no, they're very good words too. And you think,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, not quite
they're
as good.
Not quite Hugh's, as iconic. But
Hugh's son
was
very gracious, actually. Yeah. He said, no, my father always credited Kenneth Wolstenholme with great words.
When we were working on Fantasy World Cup, we got into the old ITV archive and we got loads of stuff from... That basically, it was when the satellite was passing over Mexico, was when you had that window to do stuff, basically. So there was that moment, wasn't it, where Hugh Johns was doing some stuff. He only had that small window to do these interviews, and he rushed out. I think it was Bobby Moore. He was going to chat to. And he stands there and he says, Bob, any second now, we're just basically waiting for the satellite to come over. He says, right, we're ready to go. And just as he's about to start, he burps and he goes, sorry, Bob, bloody peanuts.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's then he, right. Remember, a great clip.
Yeah. And then he does the interview.
Funny enough, his son didn't mention that.
No, he didn't. They didn't have the bloody peanuts collection of T-shirts and hats. That's a great shame. Anyway, a couple of things to get you going on today. Less than gracious medal ceremonies. I'm sure you've played Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning lessons in any sport, and you've gone to the home of the team you're playing in a cup final, and they've lost. So, I mean, just a bit of skullduggery. I mean, it wasn't that bad yesterday, but shades of John Howard in 2003. So, if you've got tales of less than gracious award ceremonies, talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSHNJ. Yeah, the good people at Mabre are coming in. You may remember them producing wonderful kits for Barcelona in the early 80s. Real iconic old kits now, but the sort of Gary Lineker era as well. They supplied the kits for a long time, but they've kind of moved into different fashion areas, and they have managed to get the license for the first ever official Beatles football shirts. It sounds like a weird idea, but they're incredibly effective. We will tell you more about it later when one of the guys from Mabre pops in to see us. We may be chatting to the world karaoke champion. She went all the way to Panama.
Tremendous.
Andy's first question was, did she buy a hat? That's what I'm up against every day. Every day, that is.
Well, 3 days a week.
3 days a week. Not 8 days a week. Which leads us on to why we want Beatles footballers. We are after your Beatles footballers. So you're off. Day trip here. Well done. He didn't put your name on that. That's pretty good.
I'm going with I Want to Hold Your Hand Danovich.
Oh, that's that. Oh, yeah, Andy Brassel will like that. Matt in Brighton. George Berry Fields Forever. Very good. Ringo.
That's clever.
Ringo Starbell grade. Hey, Jude Bellingham. That was one of the first we come up with, Rob. But thank you in Fleet. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was a sporting all-rounder. Yeah, we're going to talk about this, Kerry, later on. He played cricket for Scotland, apparently.
Did he?
Took Grace's wicket.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bet Grace wasn't happy about that.
No, he didn't take it well. So anyway, get in touch, your Beatles footballers. We're also looking, as we said, for the less than gracious award ceremonies. The other thing is, that escalated quickly. Very minor arguments escalating. Maybe a family grudge, an argument that's lived on with you and someone else that started out in a very tiny way. The kernel of it really is something that shouldn't have turned into what it turned into. This is a couple of guys in a kitchen having a row, started throwing potato croquettes at each other, but it then escalated and ended in violence, to which one of the people involved was handed an 18-month community sentence.
Good Lord.
So, that escalated quickly. 1 minute you're throwing potato croquettes, the next minute you're in court. So
it's quite a poor missile, the potato croquette, because it's only got a sort of superfluously hard outside and quite a soft mash inside.
Okay. So
it's not like throwing a potato at somebody, for example.
That's quite dangerous, isn't it? Yeah, like throwing a cricket ball at someone.
Well, basically, that's true.
Well, if you threw a potato croquette off the Empire State Building,
you give that any thought?
Dutch Holland, yeah.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Yes, as the good people at Maybrook popping in to see us later on to tell us about these first ever officially licensed Beatles football shirts. Mm. You've gone a bit puntastic. Of course you have. I think the best one so far is George Berry Fields Forever, Matt in Brighton. Love, Love Meadow is quite good. Love Meadow.
Love Meadow.
Peter, with a little help from my friends, Matthew. Thank you for that. Chris in Solihull gave us the Meadow one. Steve Tax Manorman says Gaz in Liverpool. Norwegian Woodgate. Thank you very much. Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSHNJ. Joining us now then to reflect on a wonderful game of football on Friday night. What better way to spend your Friday evening than banging your head against the wall?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Keeping your suggestions coming in. Our own Charlie Baker's come up with Tomori Baka Yoko Ono. Thank you, Charlie. See you tomorrow.
Very much, yeah.
We'll see you later, actually.
Richard Aldridge has DM me on Instagram with Octopushkus's Garden.
That's pretty good.
That's quite good.
I Sergeant Kepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band says Bob and Arbroath, Magical very Mystery Touré, and Lady Maradona. You can keep them coming. Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSHNJ. She's leaving Ian Wone. Not sure. Neil in Chester.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
One thing we didn't mention with Danny was, of course, then Jude Bellingham's absence. Yeah, he really missed his spark. He made a difference. And also, the pitch, I mean, they're talking about the pitch tonight. I think the pitch at Wembley is not great. It doesn't play well. The ball doesn't glide across the surface. You could see the players having to push it harder, and it's bobbled. It's not a great surface. It doesn't lend itself, I don't think, to great football.
They've not had a lot on there. There's no reason for that. No. Have they had anything particularly big going on at Wembley recently?
I don't
think so. Chop the pitch up, not that I can think of.
It's just, you know, it's just my feeling. I don't know if other people feel the same, but that's what the last two games I've watched, I've thought, it's not great. There's something not quite right about it, but there we go. Did you know that this was in the the Mail this morning?
Hmm.
Who was the first football team to adopt a mascot?
Who was the thing? You want me to answer that?
Well, if
okay,
you
what
know.
Year was it?
1937.
Okay, it's a big difference. Okay, yeah. 1937, the first team to have a mascot. Who were big in 19... Huddersfield Town.
Close, it was Barnsley FC.
Okay.
And it was Amos the Donkey.
Okay.
He was a real donkey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he wasn't a sort of mascot.
Amos the Donkey, Barnsley Donkey. FC, 1937. I've got to look that up, Andy. Let's find out a bit more about Amos the Donkey. Can you tell us more?
No.
Amos, there it is. I've got a picture of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what about... Actually, somebody predates that. Barnsley's fair... I can't believe this has gone down a bit of a rabbit hole, hasn't it? Barnsley's first ever official mascot was a bloke called James William Riley.
Oh, okay.
He was the mascot in the 1912 Cup final, known as Amos, since he wasn't a donkey. So what would be in club mascot? Amos would be seen...
Oh, no, Amos and the Donkey. Oh. That's right. Often mistakenly referred to as Amos the Donkey.
Yeah, by you, just now. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
No, Amos was the bloke. He would be dressed in full riding gear.
What was the donkey's name?
That's how I'll look that up. I don't want any Barnsley fans coming up with very poor Barnsley players for the name of the donkey. Because I know that's what you're tempted to do. Oh, well, listen, do you want to hear this?
Yeah, go
this, I mean, you've opened this can of worms, Andy.
Fine.
So he was the mascot of the 1912 Cup final. His name wasn't even Amos, but everybody had known him as Amos since childhood. Sorry about this. As well as being club mascot, Amos was seen dressed in full riding gear, wearing a large flowery hat, apparently, riding one of a local donkey. Well, it would be a local donkey. Wouldn't bring one in, would you? He lived on Shaftesbury Road, Stairfoot, and worked at Ryland's Glassworks.
He had a tragic end to his life.
He did. Sadly, Amos was fatally injured when he was knocked down by a bus.
Blimey.
That's how it's actually happened to someone. How often do you sit there and say, well, I could be knocked down by a bus tomorrow? What if Amos ever actually said that?
Obviously, people have been knocked down by buses.
Tempting fate. I know they have been, but he never married, apparently.
I don't know if the donkey was involved in the accident.
Might have tripped him over.
No.
The bite a bit. Maybe maybe he didn't look after... I don't know. I mean, I'm just surmising. So there we are, Amos the donkey.
Marvellous, isn't it?
Not Amos the donkey, Amos and the donkey. Yeah. The Jim White album. I thought we'd all buy that this Monday lunchtime, wouldn't we? We are looking for Beatles-based football. Rubber Soul Campbell. Somebody has come up with. While my guitar, David Bentley weeps, says Kerry in Swansea. Very good. Yeah, that's quite nice. Stew Up a Ladder in Bournemouth gives us Paperback Righty. Very good,
good,
Stu.
Yeah,
we like that.
Good, yeah.
What else have we got? I Want to Hold Your Hands, Van Breukelen. says Nick from Gravesend. And no, it doesn't quite work. What else we got? Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSH and J if you want to keep adding to the list. I am the Warhurst. Very good. Lovely, Agita. And yes, that's pretty good. Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSH and J.
I'm delighted to have made today's Daily Star.
Oh, yeah, well done, Andy.
Yes, I sent them in a photo of me and Trevor McDonald playing a Bunbury game.
Yes.
Because you have to send in like a... It's called
You and a Celebrity.
Happy. Send us your photos of anything you like. It can be you with a top celeb. So I thought, well, he's a top celeb.
He is a top celeb, yeah.
And I'm not, so I sent it in, and it says, yeah. Sir Trevor and Andy.
Oh, OK.
Like we're a ventriloquist act.
Like a ventriloquist act. And finally, it'd be good, wouldn't it?
Because I love star texters. I mean, here's a typical one. Once again, the Daily Star has reflected the mood of the nation. Yes, robins are the best birds on the planet. Mm. They'd rather stay in Britain for the winter than singe under a foreign sun.
singe under a foreign sun.
Well, obviously, it's mad, isn't it, really? Yeah. But somehow robins are better because they're British.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've just seen Adrian Durham's been sending some pictures. He's having a little walk around Scopy ahead of tonight's game. Mm. And he's found some interesting statues, one of which is Mother Teresa, who was born in Scopy, apparently. So he's gone to check that out this afternoon. He's not taking advantage of he's working. 3 pints and a pizza for a tenner. I'm sure quite a lot of the England fans will be doing that, definitely this afternoon.
For some reason, our friend Dave Tully, who's here actually in the gallery today,
he's now sending in suggestions.
He just sent me a text.
Could have shouted it through the window.
Could have handed me a note, Dave.
Yeah.
It says that Gareth out here has come up with... Here comes the Son Heung-min.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's another one. Yeah, I think a couple of people have come up with that one. Thank you, caller. I am the Walcott, says Mark in Bangor. Dear Podence. Oh, very good, Mark. Yeah, that's very good.
That's excellent,
yeah. Talksport.com, text 1889, tweet TSH and J. Where's this one come from? C.H. Moore, Cheddar Cricket Club. I don't know if he's Arthur Conan Doyle, just making it up. Captaining a club cricket 2020 final a few years ago against a team of... three divisions above us, I noticed 3 bottles of champagne in their dressing room before the start of the game.
Ooh,
aye, aye. Yeah. That's the one, isn't it, CH, that you stick on the old dressing room wall and tell your boys about. We caused a huge upset and beat them by one wicket. I poked my head round the door afterwards, asked them if they'd let us have the bubbles to celebrate. Needless to say, I was told where to go. I had the door slammed in my face. Luckily, someone had brought along some cans of cider.
Well, you can also imagine that World Cup winners India T-shirts that the players were going to put on, they've all gone.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody will find those. I don't know if they sell that sort of stuff outside the stadium. Get your World Cup winners T-shirts.
I did love the fireworks. You think they might have had a bit of... sort of, you know, thought to themselves, this is not great. Every time the ball went for a six, the fireworks, the rockets went off. And at the end, the rockets
just
came
to compound it.
Oh, no, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah. They kept cutting to Modi, of course. And so what's he supposed to do? He's sitting there watching the game. He can't look like too bad a sport. And somebody says something funny to him and he laughs. Mm. And everybody's piling in, saying, laughing at India's misfortune.
Yeah, for goodness sake.
It wasn't great for business, was it, really? You can certainly not. Being in your own stadium with your name on it, watching the team
That's
lose.
That's why it was such a brilliant win for Australia. Yeah. To beat India... in India in the World Cup final is some achievement.
That's what Michael Vaughan's saying. They deserve to be, when you consider what this particular group of players have done, they deserve to be.
I kept thinking, though, they've retained the Ashes. I'm like, I wouldn't really crow about that. We outplayed them. It was a moral victory for England. If it hadn't been rained out, we would have won. We would have won the Ashes.
We would. So I think we would have won the Ashes.
I wouldn't really be boasting about that one. But it's a pity the T20 series wasn't sort of next week. 4 days is not time for both teams to get over this.
Anything else you want to share with us, Andy?
what else have I got?
Lucy in the Sky with Rushton and Diamond, says Simon from Cannock, while you're doing that.
Yeah.
George Weir can work it out, says Stephen Leeds. I had this one as well. Happiness is a warm Angus gun. You could
very
have had
nice.
Brian,
yeah,
his dad.
Good.
Thank you, Chris in Durham.
We could do planning news.
Marnie, that's what I want. You like that's good, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
good.
Chris again. And a Mervyn Day in the Life. So
there are a lot of them
coming.
Now you think of them. Then there's a lot of Beatles songs.
There certainly are.
Have you got the planning news jingle?
Planning news.
Marvellous. Yeah. Well done.
This is Tyson Fury, isn't it?
It is. His £4 million mansion plans have been floored again, this time by birds.
Birds, yeah.
He has been told the featherweight flappers It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Flocking to ponds or fruit trees on his land may be a hazard to nearby jets.
Mm.
He's already given up that on hopes of demolishing...
That won't play well next door today, will it?
What?
Nearby jets.
No, it won't. Oh, that's very true.
We've all seen Sully, haven't we?
No one knows what you're talking about. Instead, he hoped to extend
yes.
the existing 8-bedroom home and install a basement music room, games area, breakfast and gardening rooms and a cinema.
Oh.
But there you go, so it's not going to happen, really.
Are they a musical family, the Furies? I mean, maybe the kids are having lessons on stuff, so...
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe they could... the Furies string quartet would be fantastic.
It clearly doesn't need the money, clearly doesn't need the fighting. I think that's part of the problem, that's why I'm not sure that he'll
be... What do you think, he's lost his hunger, Andy?
Well, I'd say he probably has.
You can't completely judge him on that fight, which, you know, he looked a bit undercooked
We'll see what happens, yeah.
Yeah.
He's getting on a bit now.
I think we are basically going to be looking at the Usyk fight, though. And as Johnny Nelson said when he came into us the other week, he doesn't know based on that whether he didn't prepare properly or his legs have gone. He said, we'll probably find out against Usyk, won't we? So that will be interesting.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Time to head around Europe. Look at World Cup qualifying, winners and losers of that as we reach the end of the road, barring the playoffs. Andy Brassel joins us as always. Good afternoon, Andy.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. We're going to start with something England related that you just passed. This has come in from Andrew McKenna. Quite amazing. Bayern Munich expects around 100,000 Harry Kane shirts to be sold by the end of the season, a kicker is saying. By Christmas, Kane will have sold more shirts than any other player in an entire season in the club's
history. It's really remarkable.
History. Wow, what an impact he's had.
Yeah, it's not really that surprising, though. I mean, I was there the weekend when Kane signed, and he made it that sort of cameo debut in the German Super Cup, lost to Leipzig. And it was absolutely beating down the sun that weekend. And there were massive queues out of every Bayern shop in the city, of which are about 8-10, including the one at the stadium too. And everyone was buying a Harry Kane shirt. And you've got to bear in mind that the way the transfer market works these days and how Bayern have worked in the past. You know, they've not been about going out and splashing 100 million on a megastar. And there was a huge moral debate over whether Bayern should be doing this, because it is something that they'd only done, really spent like proper money and not anywhere near that level a handful of times in their history. And for them to get the current England captain, the current England record scorer, who's still a going concern in his prime and not over the hill, it's something that's absolutely mind-bending to German football culture. But, of course, it's clear that it's attracted the interest of people all over Europe as well.
Yeah, they only got him because Daniel Levy didn't want to send to an English club, let's be honest.
Well, but they took advantage of that, didn't they? And it's obviously clearly paid off. I see he's got a house now. So once his family are over and he's settled down, he's been doing all this.
He might score a few goals.
With his big plate, hasn't he? Yeah. Alan Partridge style. So he's been living, he's not even settled down yet, has he? And he's playing like this.
Well, no, Thomas Müller made that joke about you're going to run out of room in your hotel suite when he got the match ball after the hat-trick against Dortmund. I once saw a programme on Channel 4 where there was an actual adult man who bought himself a small terraced house to keep his Lego in. I'm wondering if Kane might do that with his Bayern trophies and match balls.
That's a good idea.
So, I suppose we should start with France 14, Gibraltar 0. That just feels a bit cruel. I mean, what can you do? Did you watch that all unfold, Gareth? I'm going mad. So why called you Gareth? Sorry, Andy.
I've been promoted to a Champions League winner.
Yeah, not so bad.
It's good. I knew it'd pay off this lot eventually. I think I'd rather have been watching that than be Ethan Santos, who's the Gibraltar player who scored the own goal that got it going in the second minute. A 2-0 down after 4 minutes. Santos was sent off after goal 3 on VAR review for one of those tackles that it's kind of rarely punished, really. Warren Zaïre-Emery, the 17-year-old who was making his debut for France, scored the third goal. And Santos, in trying to block it, sort of studded him on the top of the ankle. It's one of those ones that's normally seen as, you know, goal-scoring collateral damage. It's not often punished. And, you know, I'm not saying it shouldn't be punished. I think it was fair enough. And Santos didn't complain as he went off the pitch, probably because he, like his teammates, was a bit out of breath by that point. But what I found remarkable is the little bit of footage that the FFF, the French FA, released the day after. So this was at half-time in the France changing rooms. And Didier Deschamps, given his team, you know, not exactly a still nil-nil lads kind of speech, but saying, look, you've got I don't want any of you slacking off. You've got the opportunity to make history. History is 10 against Azerbaijan, going back, 10, 12 years, something like that. You can really do something here. So it's up to you whether you want it. If you want it, go get it. And they did. They really did. Of course, it really helps, obviously, when you can bring Olivier Giroud, for example, off the bench. Now, I think there are a couple of major things to come out from this. I mean, there's the wider debate about whether France should be playing Gibraltar, which I guess we'll come to in a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
A point that Danny was quite keen on Trans Europe Express last night. Funnily enough, though, when, you know, there's always this talk in Spain about the FIFA virus when players get injured on international duty. Now, it's always looked at as if international football is the demon here. And of course, Gavi got a serious injury playing for Spain against Georgia last night, which is going to keep him out for the rest of the season and the Euros. But this idea of like pegging it as the FIFA virus, like if you didn't play international football, the injuries wouldn't happen. I find that absolutely bizarre argument personally. But Zaïre-Emery is just at 17 years old, as we said. I mean, he was describing in a press conference earlier this week how after training, he was going off to do his Spanish homework. That's how things are, because he's doing his back next summer. And Mbappe was just laughing afterwards, going, you know, this guy, he's like my little brother, but he absolutely blows my mind how good he is and how normal he is in this situation. But him getting injured for PSG is huge. And it could actually have an effect on Newcastle as well, because you look at that group, which... Now, PSG need to really come out and win that game against Newcastle at the Parc des Princes in the next game. So not this week, but next week. So what are we talking about? 8 days' time. Zaïre-Emery, he may be 17. He has been their best midfielder, PSG's best midfielder so far this season. So that's something that's really huge for them. But I wanted to know what you guys thought about the France-Gibraltar debate or the idea of...
It's a complete waste of time. And what is the point of these teams being in these groups and just getting thrashed every time? It's absolutely...
The counter-argument is that if you do have a qualifying competition and these countries never get a chance to play nations like France.
They should all play each other.
Then how does the sport grow? How does the sport grow in those countries?
It's not going to grow in Gibraltar, is it? Whatever you do. It's just not going to... Lionel Messi could become Gibraltar. It's not going to grow. Forget it. And getting injured...
That's breaking news here on TalkSport.
It's true. Getting injured in games, in pointless games, that's what's annoying for club fans. It's not that they get injured because of international football. It's getting injured in games that don't matter, that they didn't even really need to play, shouldn't be. Like tonight, what's the point of this game?
But you look at the roasting England have got since Friday, and that's a game that didn't really matter. But, you know, that's the standard they're held to.
It's difficult for the players to get themselves up for games like that.
Where do you stand on it, Andy? I mean, as I said, the counter-argument to Andy's is saying they should have pre-qualifiers. You're wasting everybody's time. Is the sports won't grow in those countries because they never get a chance to... you've spoken to Gibraltar players. Even on the end of 14-0, they'll probably say...
Well, I'm sure the San Marino Premier League's going to become as big as our Premier League.
But, you know... That is the argument. But
why does every league have to be as big as the Premier League? You shouldn't participate because they're not as big as England or Spain.
Who wants to lose 14-0? What is? I play when I was at school. This used to happen to us. We get beaten 16-0.
We are. We're getting to the
now. It's all coming out now.
Just
right,
lie on this couch, Mr. Jacobs.
But it could have put me off football for life, which it didn't. But it could have done.
I think the thing is, we're talking about this as if it's something that happens all the time. We're talking about basically the best team in the world playing maybe the worst team in the world.
Yeah.
Or so pretty close. So this isn't something that happens all the time, is it? You're talking about two games in a qualifying campaign where Didier Deschamps is entitled to pick his full team or not pick his full team or do whatever he wants to do. Yeah. But I would say the idea that football, okay, Gibraltar's an extreme example, but I think you look at other smaller nations and how those thrashings actually that seem pointless at the time.
Well, let's have a 196 team World Cup then. You know, that's the argument, isn't it?
It's ludicrous.
But we're not talking about the World Cup finals. We're talking about the qualifying campaign. They are qualifiers. And if you're one of the bigger teams like France or England, it's a bit easy for you. So it's a bit unedifying. And that is the way it is. But if you look at the way that, say, the Faroes have improved, if you go back over the last couple of campaigns, obviously, I think the Nations League has really helped. They've beaten Lithuania. They've beaten Turkey at home in the last couple of years. You look at Turkey themselves. They were losing 8-0 at Wembley when you go back to the end of the 80s. Albania were getting massive thrashings off England at one point. And now you look at Albania. They've qualified for two out of the last three Euros. But all above all, whether they qualify or not, it's about the right to participate. That's what international football is all about.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Now, as we've been saying, so much merchandise with the Beatles' name on it over the years, but never football shirts until now. Maber, you possibly remember us producing some fantastic kits for Barcelona in the 80s and 90s, have picked up the official licence to produce Beatles football shirts. We're holding a couple of them now from maybe the global head of marketing. Jonathan Jones has joined us in the studio. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, good. Their things are beauty, Andy, aren't they?
Oh, they're fabulous. They really are. I love this. It's really...
That's kind of Vasco style shirt with a sash across it and the Beatles' name. Yeah. So we were asking you off air, but I mean, I found it fascinating. How do you get the licence for something like this? How do you go about...
Well, I mean, there's a number of ways to do it. We're lucky that we know some people at Apple Corps. You know, there's, you know, as we said before, they've never done a football shirt association before.
No.
So working with the design team there, our design team, to come up with something that's representative of what we feel the Beatles are about. And with this shirt, we've concentrated on the Abbey Road album. We've taken the iconic zebra crossing and used it in a number of different ways, a number of different formats across the shirt.
So
it's very timely, though, isn't it? I mean, the time is perfect.
I mean, it's worked out very well for you, hasn't it?
Yeah,
#1.
Yeah, the stars kind of aligned for us on that one. Yeah, it worked out nicely.
I imagine they're pretty hands-on. I don't think, you know, there's a fair bit of control. They want to make sure they're very happy with it.
Absolutely.
In every aspect before they say yes.
Mean, you know, there's a sign-off process in all of these things, and, you know, we wouldn't be doing the service to the Beatles if we didn't pay that attention to the shirt. And, you know, we're really happy with the results and, you know, fingers crossed it will go well.
So it's two football shirts, is that right?
Yeah, so it's two football shirts, a classic Maber track jacket, which has got original print from Beatles gig tickets. And then there's four additional T-shirts.
Yeah. So again, you needed to talk to them to get all the access to all these old tickets and stuff.
Yeah, so when you work with Apple Corps and the Beatles, you're given access to kind of all the back catalogue of music, film, images, and you know, that's absolute, you know, huge amount of things to go through. And as I say, we focused on Abbey Road for this one, but we've got our license is over 2 years, so there'll be more products coming out off the back of this.
We can't wait to wear this at Glastonbury. That might help us.
Yeah, there's a couple of t-shirts as well. You've done like a training tee and some other bits and pieces. That's a, you know, although actually the prices are not ridiculous considering these are limited edition, and they're going to be really sought after globally. They're sort of £60, which is probably cheaper than a Premier League football shirt.
It absolutely is, and you know the football shirts are at 60, the t-shirts are at 50 quid, and the track tops at 75.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah. And when will they be available from?
So official release is tomorrow at 4 p.m. Right. And that's on Mabor.com.
Okay.
Is that how people buy them?
People buy them from Mabor.com, yeah. It's a 2-week exclusive there. So you know, there will be at Classic Football Shirts, but I think they're gonna go pretty quickly.
I think they will.
So Mabor.com tomorrow at 4 p.m. is the
You would imagine a lot of these will be going to the Far East and all everywhere, just, you know, everywhere. The Beatles will be everywhere, so you shouldn't have too many problems.
It's, well, that's
a nice problem to have.
That's the hope.
Crashing the server.
Absolutely. That's the dream.
Yeah, fantastic. So Mabor, I remember that there's really early 80s kits that Barca wore were just lovely kits. And then kind of later in the decade, Gary Lineker would have been wearing Mabor, wouldn't he? I would have thought when he was out there.
So Mabor was Barcelona's first ever official kit supplier. Mm. There's only ever been three. We had the license for 10 years between 82 and 92. And, you know, we're really lucky in the fact that we've got Maradona, Koeman, Guardiola, Gary Lineker, Steve Archibald, Stoichkov, any number of iconic players wearing our iconic jerseys.
And they won the European Cup at Wembley in a Mabor shirt, and that's that iconic orange
that's
shirt.
That's the iconic orange one, yeah.
I understand you've got one in the bag. Have you? Let's have a look at that. Show that to the camera. Look at that, Andy. I don't mind, Andy. Look at this.
So if you can get hold of one of them, they're maybe worth their weight in gold, but yeah, they're certainly an iconic shirt because Barca didn't really play in that shirt for that season. You know, they don't often wear their away shirt in those days.
And it was the days when they didn't change their kits every season. They didn't have three kits. It makes it much more valuable.
Yeah, and they changed out of that shirt into the traditional red and blue for the presentation.
Yeah.
So if you see the images, they're wearing orange shorts, but they've changed out of that shirt for the presentation.
The orange had something to do with Johan Cruyff and...
Yeah, well, I mean, he's the godfather of Barcelona, obviously.
Whoopsie.
Actually, Mabor is still intertwined with the Cruyff family.
Oh, okay. So, will you be producing a lot of these Mabor sort of Barcelona vintage kits as sort of replicas?
Yeah, so we've got a range coming out really shortly, which takes inspiration from not just Barcelona, but some of the other Spanish teams we've had. So that's Betis, Atletico Madrid, Valladolid.
Did they ever sort of stray beyond Spain as a brand?
It's just Spain and Portugal in the 80s.
Yeah.
We have a team in the States now called Oakland Roots, which is owned by the rapper G-Eazy and Marshawn Lynch, American footballer. They're doing some really interesting things with their
kids. So you're looking to do sort of new stuff with them rather than it just being vintage?
Absolutely. So from next season, we've got five new teams in Spain. And we're actively chatting to teams, all the way through the pyramid in the UK and Europe.
Getting into the big clubs, of course, it's pretty well sewn up. It's very, we've just seen...
It's tricky.
Castor do that, and we've seen them sort of muscle in, but it's not an easy thing to do, is it?
It's not, but, you know, where we might not necessarily have the same power as Nike and Adidas and those guys, our business is purely football. It's the only thing we do. You know, we're really hot on design. We concentrate on that. And, you know, we work closely with the clubs to produce things that we don't, you know, feel have been produced before and hopefully will become collector's item.
And you've got some other Barca stuff in there.
Yeah, so that's your classic. That's your Maradona one.
That is the shirt. Was that about the 82?
I think that one's an 82, maybe 83.
That is a great classic.
Is it hard to get these original fabrics?
So we can replicate the original fabrics using the traditional techniques, but it is amazing. What
these are the originals from the 80s, then?
That one is, absolutely.
You said they go for quite a lot of money,
they're tough to get hold of at the moment. Yeah.
I was mentioning to you, I knew somebody who lived in Barca and went over in an old Toff shirt at work. This is like, 25 years or so ago. But there was no concept of wearing vintage shirts. They just didn't get the idea. Why are you wearing the old shirt? Well, it's cool. Well, it's not, is it? It's an old shirt. They, so, I mean, I think that's changed.
That's absolutely changing now. If you go into, you know, any football club store, there's replicas of older shirts because, it, you know, it's another market. And I think it harks back to, you know, I remember certain shirts of when I was growing up. I've still got my England-Italian 90 shirt. You know, it draws back memories. And, you know, football shirts are powerful things to do that. So, absolutely, that market's growing.
Yeah, and you say that you're also doing stuff with Pony, is that right?
So part of our business has some old Pony licences that we work with as well, yeah. So that's Spurs and West Ham.
West Ham and that sort of era.
Wow. Yeah. That's nothing, it's a separate business to Mabre and it's, you know, sold through the clubs themselves.
Right. So if people would like to get one of these fantastic jackets or the Beatles shirts, you say Mabre's website tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, Mabre.com, which is M-E-Y-B-A at... 4 p.m. tomorrow.
Wow. And it'd be interesting, as Andy says, when we're, I mean, I take it Apple will be doing a little bit of promo around it and letting people know. And I'm sure the newspapers and stuff will be fascinated by the idea.
We hope there's going to be a lot of activity. Yeah. We're really proud of it. And hopefully shirt collectors and Beatles fans and football fans alike will think the same.
Yeah, well, good to talk to you, Jonathan. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
It's great.
There we are from Mabre. That's Jonathan Jones. And tomorrow afternoon, M-E-Y-B-A is how you spell it. If you want to go along to their website and look at the Beatles shirts and maybe pick one up, they'll be available from tomorrow.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. The Talk Sport Clips of the Week.
I think about 3 weeks ago, for the first time, Andy, ever, we talked about the Beatles when the single came out. You know, the new single came out?
Yeah.
The first time, and they got
now and then,
and played that and talked about it. We hadn't really talked about the Beatles before, but we played that song. And at the time, Mark in Leeds got in touch and said, "Why are you talking about the Beatles? What's it?" And I said, "Well, I thought, well, it's relevant." And we spoke to a football writer about it and did it with a football at the same time. Talked about Leeds, even though he's in Leeds. So, haven't mentioned them since. 3 weeks later, he said, "What is this show's obsession with the Beatles?"
Oh, go away.
I call it an obsession. Although I feel like we should, like, make Adrian's famous Daily Arsenal, and we should have a Daily Beatles just for Mark. Definitely.
Honestly.
Anyway, Clips of the Week pewter. We've dusted down some old clips, box of mini discs in the corner. One of those, somebody said. Oh, look, that's a gold mine. Well, I say, not quite gold, it's a pewter mine. Because we can't definitely say that all the clips we're going to bring you are gold, because they're warts and all from March 2003. We've not heard them since. We'll leave it to our producer to pull them together. So this is all new to us. We know not what to expect. So Andy, kick
us off. He does occasionally ask me, "Who's this voice?"
Yeah, who was this person? Yeah, we can't always identify them.
Usually.
There was quite a lot of people that flitted through.
Well, there were a few passing through.
There were a few under the old management.
That's very true.
Who could last no more than 15 minutes. First World War fighter pilots, they were radio presenters on Talk Sport back in the day. Anyway, Andy.
Oh, we begin with... Sorry, I wondered what you wanted me to do there. Yeah. We begin with Mike Parry and Alan Brazil chatting to a guest.
Morning, Alan.
Phil, thanks for joining us. Thank you very much ahead of a big, big day today.
That's excuse. I think the fire alarm's going off on in a minute.
Oh, really? Fire alarm? Oh, blimey. Don't worry about that. You're on TalkSport now.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah. Mate, Mike, get burner and crisp. Yeah, reckon it. Yeah, don't worry, Mike. I think I will leave if you don't mind. Here's Mr. Parry with a question for cricket correspondent Jack Bannister.
Yeah, now, Jack, I'm not sure what you've heard over there, but once again, the speculation in this country about Graham Thorpe making another, you know, Vanguard Rising from the Ashes appearance.
Vanguard?
Vanguard Rising from the Ashes.
That's my favourite part of fantasy football, Vanguard from the Ashes.
It was brilliant. I used to love those. They were brilliant, Vanguard from the Ashes. Now it's time for Vanguard from the Ashes.
This is Alan Brazil and Mike Parry discussing the weather.
And I tell you what, enjoy the weather today, tomorrow night, but Thursday, that rain is coming.
And when the rain came... That's an old Beatles song, by the way.
Is it?
Not sure it is.
Not sure it is. Do you mind not mentioning the Beatles, because there's another listener that goes
what
mad.
What is this show's obsession with the Beatles?
What's that clip doing?
Now you're playing old clips from 2000.
He doesn't necessarily speak like that, of course.
He's from Leeds. I doubt if he does.
He probably does.
Anyway, let's move away from Alan and Mike briefly. And it's our old mate Dickie Kaufman.
Oh, yes.
lots to get through in the next hour of the show. We've got Six Nations Rugby with former England prop Gareth Chilcote.
Southgate
and Gareth Chilcote.
So it's Gareth Chilwell's birthday today.
Who's Gareth Chilwell?
Chilcote.
Don't you start.
No, it's Gareth Chilwell's birthday as well. But
who's Gareth Chilwell?
Just a mate of mine.
Oh,
Gareth,
okay.
Gareth Chilwell. I thought he'd be happy birthday, Gareth.
Happy birthday, Gareth.
He said covering it up.
Yeah. Brilliantly as well.
Gareth Chilcote. No one would have noticed that. Today.
Or are you?
Yeah. Exactly.
Back to Mr. Parry and Mr. Brazil now, who were trying to get their heads around the new technology of the time, mobile phones. Blimey, that dates it, doesn't it?
Mm.
Instead of which, you get all this goofy text language. You know, you two can, you woo woo 88 and all this.
There's only one thing goofy around here.
Yeah, great, great is spelled G8. That's supposed to be great. I mean, kids' thumbs are getting fatter than the rest of their fingers put together.
I'm not sure that's true.
I mean,
we've got a whole race of kids with fat thumbs now, haven't we? The whole nation of them wandering around with their big fat thumbs.
Barmy, that,
yes.
They then got a guest on. Hello. They then got a guest on to try and help clear things up for them.
Mm.
Yeah, but you don't always know that you've got a message, do you?
The message throughput's very high, very fast, very effective.
No, I meant there's a beeping noise that tells you you've got a message. You wouldn't hear that in a disco if, like, the Bee Gees were on.
The last disco you went to when the Bee Gees were on. Again, so much dates that Mike and Alan have to get a crash course in mobile phones. Sensational, isn't it?
It's very good.
Here's Big Al looking ahead to the day on TalkSport.
And football first, Adrian Dunham, Gabriel Mercotti and Guillaume Balagu.
It's pretty close. Not too bad, actually, Alan. Yeah, sorry, Gian. What's next?
Alan and Mike now taking a call.
Chris, you're on TalkSport. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, good morning.
I'm quite glad that you've highlighted this, actually, because it's obviously raised a can of beans here.
What raised about the worms?
Cheers. You're raising a can of beans. Yeah, worms involved. Who's Gareth Chilwell? This is Mike Parry, who was about to head down to Cheltenham.
No, seriously, and I've got a deerstalker hat. Got a deerstalker hat, got some tweeds, and so when we finish the breakfast show this year, and of course, you know, you have to dress lightly in the breakfast show because all those wires and all that grease and everything around in the studio.
Grease? Does he work at a fairground? It's great, isn't it?
I don't remember any grease in the old building.
I don't know, I don't remember that. Yeah, we can't move for grease. Yeah.
Didn't show in a boiler suit.
Yes, Cheltenham, and Alan and Mike were joined by a very special guest down on the course. I just wish they said who it was.
And I'm delighted to say now that I've got with me Mr. Edward Gillespie, the Managing Director of the Cheltenham Racecourse. Mr. Gillespie, good morning. Mr. Gillespie, there can't be many bigger jobs in the world of racing.
Good morning, Mr. Gillespie.
I'm going to ask Mr. Gillespie, what time do you open for business today, Mr. Gillespie? Yeah, indeed. Now, Mr. Gillespie...
Mr. Gillespie, mate, please.
Yep, and I just want to talk to Mr. Gillespie now about this meeting. It seems to me Mr. Gillespie gets bigger and bigger every year as we climb up here in Lord Vestey's box. We've got 3 days of fantastic racing ahead of us. But Mr. Gillespie, tell us about the plans to extend this meeting to a fourth day, please. Mr. Gillespie, I want to thank you very much indeed for joining us in Lord Vestey's box.
Just call him Gary. He prefers Gary.
I feel he's like bowing every time he says Mr. Gillespie.
They
like
are. They were, you could hear, you could almost hear the forelocks being tugged, couldn't you? They were tugging the forelocks. And one of the other things I wished Alan and Mike would tell us is where they were broadcasting from.
Mr. Brazil and I have the delightful honour of hosting the show direct from the course on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday mornings. Thank you, Lord Vestey.
Share a few tips on the big races and we'll be joined by several Cheltenham guests here in Lord Vestey's box overlooking the home straight. They're on the balcony of Lord Vestey's box. Morning, Mr. Parry.
Here I am. I'm on the balcony, as you say, of Lord Vestey's box.
Okay, and David, of course, there's a Cheltenham, strong Cheltenham link there, of course, with Steve Cottrell. Used to be down at Cheltenham, and here we are in Lord Vestey's box, probably about 40 yards from where we're sitting in Lord Vestey's box.
George Graham, Kevin Ball. How about that, mate?
George, I don't think you've got any chance of staying up. I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm standing on the balcony here in Lord Vestey's box at Cheltenham.
We're, of course, on Lord Vestey's box.
I'm on the balcony of Lord Vestey's box. I want to thank you very much indeed for joining us in Lord Vestey's box here. We were delighted to welcome into Lord Vestey's box here on the balcony of Lord Vestey's box at the main grandstand here at Cheltenham 2003.
Definitely Lord something, wasn't it? I can't remember his name was.
I think Lord Vestey used another box.
I think he did. I'd love to have any charge in this. What are you doing? my box that we hadn't
we
cleared
still,
it.
So whenever we get to Cheltenham, we still talk about Lord Vestey's box.
We certainly do, yeah.
We were in Lord Vestey's cupboard the first time we ever did a show.
It was the original title of Deal or No Deal, funny enough, Lord Vestey's box.
Yeah, very topical.
Working title. So there we are. There's some more clips of the week, Pewter, from back in the day. We'll dust a few more off for you next
week. I've had a text from my mate Gareth Chilwell. He said, thanks for the mention.
Oh, yes. Good old Gaz. Yeah. What is this show's obsession with the Beatles? Well, because we had the football shirts on, Mark, we've been asking the listeners to come up with puns based on the Beatles and football. Mark from Leeds says, I definitely don't speak like that. Well, you do now, Mark. You do now. Let all of his friends know that that's the way Mark speaks from now on. Cavan Peacock, that's pretty good, isn't it?
That's
from Stacky
good.
The Blue Nose. Well done, Stacky. I am the Wall, Russell Osman, says Phil.
Bad.
The Long and Winding Road to Wembley from John the Swindon.
That's
fan.
Quite good.
Fall on the Keith Hill, says Andy the Rover in Blackburn. From me to Yuski Jaskalainen, sorry. Neil the Villa fan from Birmingham. I want to hold your hands, Crankle. It sounds a bit obscene, doesn't it?
It does, really.
Wazza from Croydon. I don't want to hold your handball ref, says Lena Lillywhite from Luton. So, yeah, thanks for all of those. We'll try and squeeze a few more in. Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSHNJ, 0371 7223344 to get in touch this afternoon.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Let's see those hands.
I've got a lighter, yeah.
No, if you don't do that, smoke alarms in here and the sprinklers might go off. Only Andy could set the sprinklers off. Yeah, we were listening to the World Karaoke Champion and he did about 50 grand's worth of damage. Don't get the lighter out, Andy. Now, that's award-winning, World Championship-winning karaoke singing from Ellie Butler.
Is that Ellie?
Oh, yeah, that's
lovely
Ellie.
Voice.
No, lovely voice. Beautiful. No wonder we came back with a trophy. Mm. She's a mum from Grimsby. She went off to Panama, didn't buy a hat. And we'll find out. Yeah, and that was Andy's first question. And beat the world at karaoke. Good afternoon, Ellie.
Hello, hello, hello.
Wow, what a voice. Fantastic voice.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. The I'm stood at the train station and then just announcing my train's coming in. That's a bit awkward, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it wasn't fair to make you sing live on the platform, so it was good we were able to do that. So how did you hear about this tournament? How did you go through sort of regionals? Was there a British one first? Or?
Yes, there absolutely is. So... our company in the UK is called Vocal Star, so they are the leading supplier of karaoke equipment in the UK, and they run the competition. So that's where the karaoke side comes in. All the partners are karaoke in the karaoke industry. So ours are pretty amazing. I got to go and meet them all, and they're wonderful people. So I entered beginning of this year via video, sending videos of myself singing. And due to, unfortunately, a lack of funding, ours was all video this year, even our final. Next year, it's going to be in Bournemouth. So there is going to be a face-to-face next year.
Right.
But so I got to the final and I won that. That was back in August. And then, I won an all-expenses-paid trip to Panama, of all places. So that's where I went to represent the UK.
Wow. Fantastic. So who were the other sort of nations you had to watch out for? Who were you impressed with when you heard them perform?
Straight away, America, of course. Brazil and Canada, they were the sort of standout acts to start with, yeah. As you would imagine, they went big and they were impressive.
And were they all singing in English? Or it's like pop classics and stuff? Or
No, there was a mixture of... we've got some Ukraine there, so they sang in their own language. Brazil kind of sang a bit of both. So there was Costa Rica, Mexico. So there was a mixture of languages.
Right. And you knew you were going to choose that. So you didn't just choose it from the book at the last minute, did you? Sat there for half hour thumbing through the book.
It's my turn.
Thought I'd go with that one.
Yeah. I couldn't find the number of any other songs. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, we had to send our songs in before, so I was prepared. Yeah.
Wow.
So when you do karaoke at a party, it must be, you know, the other, it must be quite intimidating for the other singers, really.
That's right. You can always tell. You can always tell the singers when somebody who can properly sing does karaoke.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but you know what? You never sing karaoke in your best singing voice, do you?
No,
ever.
True.
Like, I go up in my football chanting voice, and right. that's
in the pub style or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to be that one that thinks there's something special, because that's how us Brits work, right?
Yeah, well, still, come away. So, who were the top three, and did they do it in reverse order when they announced the winners?
Yeah, they did. So, third place was Kazakhstan.
Right.
And then, sorry, I'm just getting on my train.
That's
while
right.
talking to you.
Okay.
Second place was the Philippines.
Wow. Okay.
And then, yeah, then there was little old me in first. So they did announce them in the reverse order.
And where were the judges from? The judges all sort of from around the world?
Yeah, all around the world. So there was judges watching virtually, and then there was judges that were actually there each night.
Fantastic. Well, there's a massive trophy to bring back from Panama.
Oh, it was huge. It was weighty, let me tell you.
Yeah, it looks like the Champions League trophy. I can see a picture of it.
There was a cash prize, wasn't
it? That's what you want.
Yes, there was. And do you know, when they gave me that trophy, I picked it up like the World Cup and kissed it. I thought, this is the closest I'm going to get.
That's very good.
Are you a Grimsby fan then?
No, I'm not. I'm a Manchester United fan.
Oh, okay. We've had a few trophies in the past. You know, I'm sure it's very cyclical football. It'll come again, I'm sure.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
And you've offered to do Eurovision. I think they should take you up on that.
Oh, I hope so. I'm working on my original music now, because to enter that, you have to have your own song. So, it doesn't matter if the song's no good, does it? It seems so.
So you, what we just heard there, you singing. That's so. Did you kind of perform in sort of clubs and places like that? And...
Yeah, well, I am a professional singer actually, so that is my job. So I perform at like weddings and holiday parks and things.
Oh,
yeah.
Brilliant. Well, look, congratulations. £4,400, and the coveted trophy. Will you go and defend your title next year? Or is that it?
I'm not allowed to enter next year, but part of the winning was that I get flown to the final next year in Finland. So I will go and take my crown and pass it over to the next person.
Okay, fantastic. Good. Well, congratulations, Ellie, flying the flag. So we did win the Cricket World Cup. So this was the next best thing we needed. We needed some good news.
We did. And I brought it home. I did. Bring
you
it
did.
Home.
You certainly did. It's come home. Thank you. Thanks very much, Ellie.
Thanks ever so much.
There we are. There's Ellie Butler there, the world karaoke champion.
Yes. I just wonder whether the Philippines singer sang Imelda Marcos's Blue Suede Shoes. It's possible.
You should about 30 pairs of those, didn't she, as
she
well?
She did. Anyway, it's a special day today.
Is it really?
Not my friend Gareth Chilwell's birthday.
It's his birthday. So it's Gareth, your friend Gareth Chilwell's birthday. Yeah. And
the legendary, brilliant rugby player,
Bath in England.
Bath in England,
very much
so.
Gareth Chilcott.
Gareth Chilcott. And we always used to play this on the show.
We used to play at the end of it. We would play out with a kind of succession of tapes. They were old, remember tapes, kids, cassettes. And we had these
some
old
some were discs.
Yeah, and they were just kind of chats with ex-sports people.
We had Freddie Truman, we had Pat Cash, we had all
and
sorts.
And before we played that day's little self-contained story, we'd play the opener. The opener to the tape. So, Andy, you got a bit nostalgic when you said Gareth Chilwell. You want to hear it again, don't you?
Well, I do. I really like it.
Okay, well, let's bring it to you now after all these years.
He was one of the hardest players of his time. He played for England from 84 to 90, British Lions and Australia in 89, 400-plus games for his team, Bath. He had the famed headband, the trademark moustache, and struck fear into opponents wherever they were. He is Gareth Chilcott. Hello, Gareth.
How are you?
How are you? Yeah. He had a famed headband.
Famed headband.
And he had a team Bath as well.
Such a high-quality production, they didn't think. You just said famed headband. Do you mind doing it again?
We can't afford to do another take. It was like a direct-cut disc. It was like playing live. That's what it was.
How are you?
Who's Lord Vesty, says Jerry. Was he in the Beatles? Don't you start. We've had enough trouble with Mark today.
He was the sixth Beatle.
Oh, you got your friend Jerry again in touch. If you don't mention the Beatles again, doesn't talk like that, apparently. He's from Leeds. Anyway, what's on the telly this week that isn't sporting? We'll find out from Mike Ward.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Mike Ward, Brighton and Hove Albion supporting Daily Star TV columnist, joins us now. Good afternoon, Mike.
List of England players that, if injured, would be
pivotal.
Yeah. I'm in today's Daily Star, actually. Have you seen
Andy Jacobs in today's Daily Star? Do you read the paper at all? do you take the Star?
You've done him now. Yeah. Go to Tex Maniacs. You'll see I sent them in.
Yes, of course.
Who doesn't? First thing every morning.
You do like Tex Maniacs, I know that.
Yeah. And there he is pictured with banned, Sir Trevor McDonald. Let's get Sir Trevor McDonald back on the, was it the old TV awards show that he used to do? Remember he used to present that? Yeah. And he'd do 5 minutes of stand-up.
Oh, brilliant.
He was no Jerry Seinfeld, was he?
He certainly wasn't.
Take my wife. He used to do all that, didn't he? I walked into the pub and he'd just do 5 minutes. Most of them would darn their backside, wouldn't they? Most
not
of the
ideal,
gigs.
Really.
So, Vinnie Jones in the country. Is Vinnie Jones in the country? Can
he
stand
in the
up?
In West Sussex, in fact. You know, he's... this is one of those things that's a celebrity decides to sort of find a new life in the countryside, hence the title. So we've had everything from Kelvin Fletcher from Emmerdale to sort of Jeremy Clarkson, I guess, doing his farming thing. And here, after he lost his wife Tanya in 2019, Vinny obviously wanted to sort of, you know, have a new sense of purpose and focus. So he's got 2,000 acres of land and a 400-year-old farmyard that he's doing up. So it's one of those fly in the wall things where you're basically just watching a guy being very affable and chaotic and surrounded by people who know what they're doing.
He was a bit, wasn't he, back in the day? I mean, from his upbringing, a bit countryside
very
much
so.
He understood all that stuff.
Pictures, aren't they, in his prime, wearing his sort of flat cap and his wax jacket and all that kind of thing. So he's in his element. There's a lovely bit right at the start as well where he's basically walking through the woods. He said, you know what? And he can recognise birds from the bird song and you never get asked for a selfie out here. It's, you know, it's blissful. And he's totally in his element. So it's actually very kind of touching as well as sort of chaotically amusing. So it's good stuff, yeah.
The Crown, the first four parts of the last season of The Crown. Yeah, I watched it over the last few days.
Yeah.
And I thought they actually did a pretty decent job. The ghost of Diana's all a bit weird.
And Dodie.
Yeah, it's just supposed to be their thoughts.
Ali Ross was saying, performance, Elizabeth Debicki, is something else, isn't it?
She's really good. Yeah, I mean, she really comes into their own. And obviously, for those who haven't watched it, this is the bit leading up to the accident in 1997. So you've got the first three of the four episodes that arrived last week are the first half of the final season. Yeah. So the rest comes in December. So it takes us up to the accident and then the aftermath and all that stuff about, you know, the royals weren't showing, you know, enough remorse in the days after her death. And that's when the ghost appears and it's Diana who persuades the ghost of Diana, or if you want her thoughts, you know, going through the Queen's head, that persuades her to sort of come down from Balmoral and show her face.
It's spooky, this performance, because at times you're watching it and you think, my goodness, this is her, isn't it?
I think you do. And I think the more you watch it, and also Al-Fayed, after a while, you sort of end up sort of I mean, I guess a lot of it is nonsense that's made up, but it's beautifully done on such a scale that you know, if you watch it with a slightly sceptical hat on. I kept having to stop and Google stuff to see if whether it really happened, whether that character really exists.
Doing that. That's true.
And you just think, I'm never going to get to the end of this. You know, did that photographer really exist? No,
really?
I just thought, have I spelled his name wrong? And I was tapping into Google.
We all did the same thing.
I just think, who's he? But I think the ghost bit was made up. But apart from that, it's absorbing, isn't it? You sort of hate yourself for liking it.
I know
as much
what you mean.
It's
kind of a bit soapy, but not so soapy that I find it unwatchable. You know
what I mean? Yeah, there have been. I mean, if you think of those things they used to show on Channel 5, the sort of royal things on a low budget, almost sort of deliberately bad.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, you know, it's very good. And we've
looked. Channel 5 should definitely call one of the shows the same four stills and the same three talking heads for an hour. Call it that, because that's what it is. It doesn't matter what the subject, whether it's Hitler, sharks, or the royal family.
Yeah, there are a few people who turn their hands around. What do you want me to have an opinion on?
The same four stills, the same three talking heads. Sounds like a winner.
Yes,
I don't mean three members of talking heads.
That would work.
Tina Weymouth, what's your take on sharks? That would be good.
Yes. Yeah. Tina Weymouth on sharks, that'll be at least three series.
That would be. Tina Weymouth on sharks. Someone's written that down at Channel 5. Weymouth, bass player of Tom Tom Club on sharks. Any question mark in pencil? It's a big Doctor Who week, isn't it?
Big Doctor Who week coming up.
Not for me, Beaky, as Alan would say. I'm not I'm not a massive fan. I take it you are, Mike. Yeah?
I'm not. No, okay. I'm not a massive fan. I just put this in because I know a lot of people are, and obviously, yeah. I like to be helpful and guide people towards things they're going to.
Yeah, no, it's good you do that.
I know. Thank you. Doctor Who, The Daleks in Colour, BBC 4, 7:30 on Thursday night, is basically episodes 5 to 11 of the very first Doctor Who series, in 1963.
Yeah.
In colour, aren't they?
In colour, yeah, colourised
them. Colourised. The old Lauren Hardys
and they've
stuff.
Created a sort of 75-minute omnibus. Not an actual omnibus. They created a 75-minute episode of the bits of the. It's. I mean, I haven't seen that version, but I have watched the version, the episode, the original versions, which obviously had just been trimmed down. I have to say, if I'm being brutally honest, it is a bit like watching Acorn Antiques. It's kind of weird and wooden.
Yeah, it's all a bit shonky, isn't it? Really?
So if you're a real fan, you'll probably absolutely love it, but it's not going to.
The outfits, the kind of aliens outfit. Were fantastic, weren't they?
Absolutely.
Like, members of glam rock bands before glam rock. That's where they got the ideas from, I think.
And when they got the Daleks attacked one of the Doctor's companions and sort of temporarily paralysed his legs. And so he collapses onto the ground and he cries, "My legs, my legs." And then he says it again. And it's just like, it does feel like it's Julie Waters or something rather coming on to do this. It's very weird. Yeah. Anyway,
So we should finish with Celebrity Mastermind. Mastermind on Friday. Let's look at the lineup. Rosie Jones, comedian and writer.
Yeah.
Radio DJ Gemma Bradley. Yeah. Dan Gillespie sells.
Yeah.
He does. He sells pretty big when he's in the feeling.
Yeah.
And TalkSport's very own Andy Goldstein.
Yeah.
Who will be answering questions on Goodfellas. Not the pizzas. Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas.
I hope Andy doesn't mind if I give away the very first question. I won't give away the answer. The very first question of his general knowledge round. This is what you get asked on Celebrity Mastermind.
Right.
Are chips made out of?
What vegetable are chips made out of?
Slightly easier than the normal mark.
I'm not going to tell you whether he got it all right or not.
He's
probably not allowed to sign something.
Chips, small pieces of fried potato.
Don't give it away.
Oh, now you spoiled it.
You've ruined it.
Now you got me in trouble.
We could have kept that going over the break and then asked the listeners to text in.
But it's a good one.
Yeah, so you catch Andy in action. Iron Man films, Dinner Ladies, the sitcom, Bernie Taupin, the lyricist, and Goodfellas that Andy did. So, go and check it out, Andy in Action. I'm sure he'll tell you about it during the week. Friday, 8 p.m. on BBC One. Thank you, Mike.
Cheers, guys.
We'll catch up with you next week.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. I reconvene tomorrow with Charlie Baker. You'll be with me on Wednesday. Anyway.
I will be,
Fantastic. Lovely. So we'll venture. I'm sure we can find something to talk about over the next 4 days before football returns. We may be doing sort of tiddlywinks or something, but we'll do our best. I'm sure we can pull something together. Maybe England to get hammered 10-0 tonight and not finish up among the seeds. Does seem unlikely. So, do hope you can join us tomorrow. If not, the podcast available at around 4 o'clock.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.